It's time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
It certainly is. Let's get the party going here with our panelists today. Jamie Ellerton, principal at Canaptus Limited, Warren Kinsella, president at Daisy Group, and Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Tasha.
You know what? I'm looking forward to this conversation, or not. It's the latest, of course, in the Ontario campaign. Let's call it what it is for the next election here. And it's a really low salvo that Premier Wynne came out with today. I'll let you be the judge, and we'll talk it out and see if this is a smart move on her behalf or a big mistake to go this route. Take a listen to who she compared Doug Ford to earlier today.
Doug Ford sounds like Donald Trump, and that's because he is like Donald Trump. He believes in ugly, vicious, a brand of politics that traffics in smears and lies. He'll say anything about anyone at any time.
Okay, tell us how you really feel. Not mincing any words there. I'm wondering, though, if maybe this is the politics of deflection, and you can reflect on that, too, because at the same time, we heard today that Moody's has downgraded the Ontario economy from a stable to a negative, and Charles Sousa was talking about that.
Let's be correct here. Moody's has affirmed the province's AA rating, but more importantly, they recognize that the province is diversifying the economy. We're making the initial the critical investments to grow the economy. Our debt to GDP is being managed.
Okay, Warren, I'll start with you. Is Kathleen Wynne trying to be smart here and put the focus on Doug Ford's character instead of the state of the economy or other negative things that she otherwise would be challenged on?
I think it's too soon. You know, I've seen the data. I suspect my friends and colleagues have seen it as well. There's just a significant number of Ontario voters who don't buy into the proposition that Doug Ford equals Donald Trump. So it's a case, but it's an overstated case. I think it does work with a certain segment of the vote, but it's the segment of the vote that she's already got. So it really feels like a save the furniture exercise. I think she needs to be looking at expanding the base and not just speaking to the base that she's got.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that, Sally, because it seems to me she's probably trying to expand the base to NDP voters by, you know, saying, look, it's a fear factor. If you don't want Donald Trump, i.e. Doug Ford, you got to vote for me because otherwise you're wasting your vote. Is that what she's trying to do here?
It might be what she's trying to do, but it's a risky strategy for a number of reasons. Listen, there's no doubt that you can draw some parallels with Doug Ford and Donald Trump, you know, kind of disdain for the media and that kind of stuff. But particularly the word she was using, the nasty, vicious kind of, I don't know that we've seen that yet, so I don't know if people necessarily buy it. It's also risky because, you know, yeah, you are trying to appeal to those NDP voters and say, listen, fear factor, but that's a very hard argument to make when you're at about the same level in the polls as the NDP. And we saw this, you know, in the 2011 federal election, the red door, blue door that Michael Ignatieff used. Saying, you know, you have to vote for me if you want to defeat Stephen Harper, and that really backfired then. So there's a lot of risk in this strategy, and as Warren said, it's pretty early days to be going out like that.
I forgot about those doors. Thank you for bringing that back. You know, I was comparing this to the, you know, all that's missing is like guns in the streets kind of thing, the Paul Martin hyperbole of a few elections ago. But that's a good one too. Jamie, let me get to you now. You know, is Doug Ford relishing this fight? Because it certainly inflamed the listeners on our show earlier when I was talking about it, i.e. supporters, a lot of them were, of Doug Ford.
Yeah, I think what you see with Doug Ford, they've kind of quietly gone about their way kind of building their campaign team. They've now launched the campaign bus, and they've been talking about priorities. And so when you hear Kathleen Wynne kind of becoming unhinged and going like vicious and negative on Doug's character herself, trying to run against Donald Trump instead of Doug Ford, and then you partner or pair that with the kind of visuals coming from Doug's rallies that look diverse, they look energetic, and they look happy, the image just isn't selling the message. And I think it is going to be a risky strategy for Kathleen Wynne going forward. So I think Doug is obviously continuing to execute and build his team, and has now got the bus on the road and starting to move forward. And I think you're going to see the Ontario PCs just very much continuously crisscross this province delivering their message and continuing to rally. Because as you look at kind of where the parties stand, the kind of one thing that's been constant now for months when you look at the Ontario polling numbers is over two-thirds of the electorate want change. So even if Kathleen Wynne is successful in driving that wedge and painting Doug as something he's not, because we haven't seen that yet, I think the potential for that to even benefit Andrea, who has put out a fully costed platform that is credible, is where people on the left can go with that change sentiment so high.
Yeah, Warren, you know, she has said, Kathleen Wynne has said, he may be Donald Trump, but I'm not Hillary Clinton, and Ontario is not the United States of America. So in other words, she's trying to distinguish herself, because the obvious leap here to me, the risk that I saw is that the minute she starts saying he's Donald Trump, then you start, of course, starting making parallels there. And, you know, well, who won the election? It was unfortunately for Hillary Clinton anyway, Donald Trump. So does she cast herself almost as the loser in the fight by casting Doug Ford as the eventual winner?
Yeah, that's one problem with it. But the other problem with it is, you know, it is falling into a trap. My prediction is Ford is going to stand up and say, hey, here's a plane ticket. If you want to go campaign against Donald Trump, you know, head to the States and, you know, I'll stay behind here and clean up the mess you made. Like, she is trying to draw him into that fight. And so far, I mean, she's been trying to do this for a number of days and he just hasn't fallen for it. And, you know, anybody knows Doug knows that, you know, while he's no genteel politician, it is a genuine stretch to depict him as Trump. So, you know, I think he's going to say you're campaigning in the wrong country.
Yeah, they've already, Lisa McLeod, actually, of the PCs, has already said that, you know, if this is not the U.S. and you're in the wrong country, and that is obviously something is a parallel that you can immediately say there's no parallel there. But as you pointed out, Sally, there are some parallels, and, you know, they do jump out at you in the sense of he's a businessman. He has a populist approach. He says things, you know, plain spoken, and sometimes he says the wrong thing and doesn't seem to, you know, really apologize for it or much care. And his supporters don't seem to care either. So is there a grain of truth in what she's saying, just maybe a grain that's a little too small to make the full comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, exactly right. You know, and going back to Donald Trump being the winner, there's this trend, I think, in politics a bit, hedging more towards that populist approach. People have gotten sick of kind of the era of straight talking points and speaking notes and never being off message that has really been in place more or less since kind of the advent of social media, where you could, you know, get done in pretty quickly if you said the wrong thing. But I think we see a move away from that right now. And people tend to like that, particularly, you know, when you get outside of Toronto. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think kind of outside of Toronto, when you get into a lot of rural Ontario, that's where you get, people always think of kind of New Democrat and Liberal switch voters. But certainly out west, and I think in more rural areas, northern Ontario, I think it's really New Democrat and Conservative switch voters. You know, I like to refer to them as throw the bums out voters, you know, who just are sick of, you know, kind of what they perceive to be as an elitist governing party, and just want him gone.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Jamie, if instead of attacking Doug Ford in this way, by reinforcing the fact that, you know, he's anti-elite and he's populist, Kathleen Wynne might have said, taken the tack instead to paint herself as not an elite. Because, yes, she's the premier of the province, but she doesn't come from a silver spoon background. You know, she can speak to a lot of ordinary things she's done in her life. Why do you think she didn't take that approach?
I think it kind of speaks to, A, the desperation of the state of the campaign. And on the same day as you had the Minister Sousa clip at a reference, that Moody's Investor Service downgraded the credit rating outlook. So, yes, he is right. It is still a AA rating. But they are now forecasting it from going from stable to negative, which means, and they specifically cite the spending pressure. So if Kathleen Wynne wants to kind of, on this news day in particular, get into what she feels is her positives and running on the government record, you are going to have to face the Liberal scandal head on and find a way to address that and move forward and show some contrition. And then we're talking about the positive stuff. That's the exact spending and out of control management of the finances that Moody's actually cites for lowering the outlook to a negative. So she was kind of put between a rock and a hard place. And instead of look to fight on the merits and kind of fight on a record, she instead chose a personal attack. And I think it speaks to the desperation of the Liberal campaign and kind of the rock and a hard spot she's in. Her campaign team is going to have to do something that actually resonates with people and starts to chip away at the high number of people wanting change. And so long as that factor remains the same, I think you're going to continue to see kind of these like frantic shifts in strategy between now and election day.
Yeah, certainly. I think there's a whiff of desperation in this one. And I share Warren's view. I share it that it's a bit early to do that. But in any event, well, we will see what else happens. When we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about another politician getting a bit of a hard time between a rock and a hard place. Or a pipeline in a hard place, I guess, Justin Trudeau. We'll be back with our panel here on Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
All right, joining us today, Jamie Ellerton, principal at Canaptus Limited, Warren Kinsella, president at Daisy Group, and Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited. All right, Justin Trudeau is off in the UK today. In fact, he just met with the Queen. Saw some nice visuals up there on the screen in front of me. But when he got there, you know, his troubles from home followed him. Greenpeace had a huge, elaborate protest, including erecting a fake pipeline around the Canadian High Commission that was labeled Crudeau Oil. Not something you want to see when you go on a foreign trip. The Trans Mountain issue threatens to make or break Trudeau's prime ministership. And Sally, I'm going to start with you because out west, this is a flashpoint. It's one here too, but much more out there. Help us wrap our heads around this. How big a test is this for Trudeau and how can he pass it?
Well, he's staked a lot of political capital on this, tying the idea of social license. Both him and Rachel Notley with a climate leadership strategy as soon as they came into government phasing out oil. And the trade-off is supposed to be that we can still have a level of economic development. It's really, and he said repeatedly, it will be built. And so getting this done is massively important. I also think it's important to note when you talk about the kind of fight between BC and Alberta, it's not in Alberta, yes, it's a fairly uniform. People want this built. It's less so in British Columbia. Even there was a poll that just came out today showing that more than half of British Columbians now, and the number has increased from the last time this was polled, now support this expansion project. Mm. Yes, there's a possibility of losing some seats in British Columbia, but there's a lot of people out there that really support this as well. And then you have Scott Moe, the Premier of Saskatchewan, where I am, who's kind of following suit with Alberta about legislation that allows them to control the flow of oil to BC. And what this shows, I think, is that it's not just a BC-Alberta fight. This is that it has broader implications for the Canadian economy and for Trudeau politically. He was a little late to kind of get on top of this. Frankly, the BC government was formed last summer, and this issue has really been kind of going since then. For a long time, he was trying to do the splits, and you can only try to do the splits for so long before you hurt yourself, really.
Yeah, Warren, how badly has he hurt himself? I mean, how boxed in is he? Is this a lose-lose proposition whether the pipeline goes ahead or not?
Well, I don't think he's hurt at all yet. I look at the NDP, I look at Sally's party. You've got BC's NDP government and Alberta's NDP government declaring war on each other. You know, Jagmeet Singh throwing in with the BC NDP, so he's been basically written off the only majority government he's got. So you got New Democrats at war with each other. You got the PCs have been, in the form of Jason Kenney, have been marginalized by the steps that Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau have taken. And Trudeau's doing, and I say this as a Calgarian, has worked in the oil patch and is a member of the Calgary diaspora. Trudeau is doing, he's using the two cards he's got to play as prime minister here. One is saying that he is considering and looking at some kind of fiscal investment in Kinder Morgan, And secondly, he's talking about taking significant legal steps against the government of British Columbia. Those are the two things that he can do, and he said he's going to do. So I, as a Calgarian, I am satisfied with the approach he's taking. And I think the other two parties are getting overshadowed by him and Notley.
Is that the case, Jamie? Is he playing this right? Is this going to play in his favor in 2019?
I'm not sure it plays in his favor. I think this is kind of a political crisis of the prime minister's own making. Picking up on what Sally was mentioning, the prime minister was kind of MIA on this file after Premier Horgan came to government in BC, backed by the Greens, and needs those three Green votes for his government to survive. And so Premier Horgan feels himself backed into a corner. And then you have Trudeau, who really, since kind of becoming a leader, has tried to suck and blow on this issue by trying to say he's pro-environment, pro-climate change, and kind of appeal to those who, like, climate change is their number one and only ballot box issue, while at the same time trying to present himself as Mr. Middle Class Economy. And so those two strategies have now kind of diverged. And you look at what's going on here, Kinder Morgan is not asking for a taxpayer bailout. This is a commercially viable project. This is a pre-existing pipeline that they are looking to twin to increase capacity to get Canadian resources to market. And they're not looking for a taxpayer bailout. What they're looking for is political certainty, because they look at what happened with Energy East, which would have brought Canadian oil from Western Canada, Eastern Canada, and got mothballed thanks to politics. You look at what happened to Northern Gateway, which went through a rigorous regulatory approval process, was approved by the previous government, and then was nixed by the Trudeau government for political expediency to further hit their political points. And so this is a thing that I think is going to dog Prime Minister Trudeau going into the next election. The only way he's going to be able to bury this issue is if that pipeline actually gets built and buried underground.
Okay, we got about 2 minutes now to finish our segment, this segment. I'm so sorry, guys, but that was a bigger conversation, and rightly so. I want to touch on one other topic, though, that's come up. It's kind of a sleeper, and get each of you your really quick take on it. Illegal migrants apparently are now outstripping the number of people making legal claims at the Canadian border. And according to some estimates, we could see up to 60,000 people try and cross the border illegally from the United States. Jamie, why is no one talking about this crisis? Is this something that the government just wants to sweep under the rug? Or are they actually, in a way, dealing with it by throwing more money at processing?
I think it's a bit of both. You've seen this kind of issue come up time and time and time again, but it doesn't really appear to have staying power in the media. When the mass migrants show up, and when you saw the refugee camp literally created at the Quebec-U.S. border, and the same in Manitoba when they crossed in the winter, it's kind of driving coverage. So there's kind of a disconnect between the broader issue of broad-based support for immigration and for being a welcoming place for asylum seekers. And when people hear that, the kind of illegal crossing versus legal crossing, I think, gets lost in the weeds on this. And so I think that's one of the reasons why this is yet to gain traction as a public issue.
Okay, Sally, 30 seconds from you. Why are we not talking about this issue much? To me, it seems like it could be a sleeper for the next election.
Yeah, I think what is clear that needs to be done is, regardless of what you think of levels of immigration, I'm very much in favor. I think it'll frankly save Canada with our lowering populations. But you can't, this cannot proceed ad infinitum as it is. This issue has come up before. I still haven't seen a whole lot of action. It didn't take a genius to see that this might be coming with, the president to the south. So you need to have a plan. You cannot have these pop-up refugee camps. You have to be able to deal with it in a more efficient manner.
Okay, Warren, is this because of NAFTA? Is that why he's not taking any action until that's resolved?
Well, I just say consider the source. I mean, are we talking about a column by Danielle Smith where she got her calculator out?
No, I looked at the numbers. She's right. They're on the Government of Canada website. So
she's saying 60,000 illegal migrants in her column. And I do not believe that is accurate. And I do not believe that. So it's true what Sally said. Part of this is because of the insanity that's taken place in the United States. But I do not believe we have a crisis. I think it's in the interest of right-wing political columnists to write that the crisis is coming, but we do not have one. And I'll be prepared to talk about it when we do, but I don't think we have it yet.
Okay, well, here's hoping we won't. I want to thank the three of you for being on today, Jamie Ellerton, Warren Kinsella, and Sally Hauser. Have a great afternoon, everybody.